Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Agamas and Temple Worship Continuation, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalaichelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Agamas are partitioned into four compartments. It aims at, if you just understand the path that it takes, one after the other, it aims at trying and identifying yourself with the mode of worship that you want to choose and how it will help you season yourself, culture yourself one step at a time and take you to a level where you are extremely seasoned and you attain the jnana nishtai that is required for liberations. So the four parts in all agamas, Sharia, Chariyai, Kriyai, Yogam and Jnana. Before going into what each of these parts detail out, I'll just read out the list of 28 agamas. I'm sure you might all be knowing it, but let it just earn a bit of a Shivapunyam for us to recall the names of the agamas. Kamika, Yogaja, Chintya, Karana, Ajita, Deepta, Sukshma, Sahasra, Amshumadhagama, Shubhrabheda, Vijaya, Nishwasa, Swayambhuva, Agnyaya, Veera, Raura, Makuta, Vimala, Chantrajnana, Mukabhimba, Prodhita, Lalita, Siddha, Santana, Sarvokta, Parameshwara, Kirana, Vatula Agamas. These are the 28 Agamas. All of them follow the same way of compartmentalizing the text into four parts, and each part has its own gist of information that they share with us. Starting with Chariyai. Chariyai is the first part, and at this level, this is more like an introductory work for someone who has stepped into Shaivam. The basics of preparing yourself as a Shaivite, that involves getting to know about how you purify yourself, or even before that, how you do your prayaschitta, or you know, feeling request for forgiving for all the sins that you've committed or mistakes that you've committed. Once that is there, you go to the next level of the purifying yourself, the pavitra vidhis. How do you purify yourself? And once that is over, you get into understanding the lakshanas of a Shivalingam, because any Shaivite with a diksha is required to start doing his Atmatabodhi, wherein a Shivalingam is given to him or her through his Acharya, Diksha Guru, and the procedures for performing Shiva Puja is taught, and so he is supposed to do the rituals as per his Guru, the Guru Parampara, to which he is a disciple of. So you to know the lakshanams of how a Shivalingam is and what it resembles and all that. Generally, there are several different theories that are put forward for what the Lingavanam and the Avudaya together represent. But one that is completely approved without any ambiguity, without any questions, and accepted in Siddhanta Saivam is that the banam, the linga banam, which is cylindrical in nature, represents nothing but the glowing pillar of fire that Parameshwara himself is. Fire has several special capacities. It has the capacity to consume anything that is offered into it, to make anything that comes in contact with it look like itself, to give all its qualities, share all its qualities to someone who ventures into it, and all of these qualities also gets into, it can be compared with that of Parameshwara. Though Shiva is represented in all the elements and all that, fire has its own special significance, and that is why a person who is doing Shiva Puja is considered to be a person who is doing his Agni Upasana. Touching and doing all your ablutions, the Abhishekas, Alankara and Dhubadipa, Naivedhyati, Upacharas and all that to a Shivalingam as gifted by one's Acharya, installed properly and performed in the way prescribed, that will equal to someone performing his or her his Agni Upasana every day. So that is why Shivalinga Puja is considered to be extremely important. Though Parameshwara has many different forms, the popular set of 25 Maheshwara Murtas or the Ashtartha Murtas, the 64 different forms and all that to be worshipped, Shivalingam is the most preferred forms by yogis and bhogis and everybody, all classifications of devotees, and it is for a simple fact that it is the most direct representation of Parameshwara as the glowing pillar of fire which has no origin or an end point. So all these qualities of fire that makes it special is attributed to Shiva also, it can be understood that way. And every time someone performs a Shiva Puja, it is like worshipping the Agni. So that's why out of all the Murtas available, the Shivalinga Murta takes precedence over Shiva Puja, and that is what is generally prescribed. Then there might be more additions to one's own Shiva Puja depending upon his own maturity in it. There might be more murtis like Somaskanda or Nataraja, or in some cases Bhikshatana and Bhairava and all that also. But Shivalinga Murti is the most preferred and the mandate worship Murti that we have for this very special reason. So, and the Agamas also speaks about the Shivalinga Lakshana, the kind of characteristics that goes into making a grammatically correct Shivalinga Murti. And there is also Lakshanas, slokas which describe the Lakshanas of Shivaganas like Nandi, Mahakala and all of them. So to understand the devotees of Shiva, immediate attendants of Shiva, then there is references to all the articles of worship that one will need. That starts from your Japamala. How many malas should be there? What are all the materials that can be used to make yourself a Japamala? And you know, how do you wear it? Where all in your body you wear it? And how to remove it, when to remove it, how to keep it safely, and all of that is described. And for anybody who is venturing into Shivajnana, yoga is a part of one's journey. So it is there even at the primary stages, at a very limited time probably, for a limited time on a daily basis. But after a point of time, the regular elaborate Shiva Puja that you perform should all be performed from within. That is where the yoga component comes in more importantly. So right from the beginning, to carry a yoga patta or a belt that you wear for a kind of comfort and ease to freeze yourself in a particular position. Especially in the early stages when you start your yoga, because we mostly follow the Ashtanga yoga traditions here, and all the asanas that you have to perform, it's much easier with the patta. So gradually once you start practicing it that way, after a point you won't even need it. But at the beginning stages you will also need a yoga patta. So that, what is the characteristic, what are all the materials that you can get for, can use to make yourself a yoga patta and all that. And there are also specific details which speaks about the associated services in a temple. Now Shariya is like getting yourself associated with Shiva Pujai at an early stage, getting to know the protocols that are followed, start doing services from a very primary level. Something as simple or something as celebrated and revered like cleaning a temple can be you exactly what Upper Brahman did, to carry an instrument in his hand, a sharp instrument in his hand, to wherever he went on in his pilgrimage. Every temple that he visited, he starts doing what is called as, celebrated as the Ulavarappani. So to clean the temple, to remove all unwanted grass, unpluck plants that are growing in the compound walls in other places that can turn out to be a dangerous element later, remove stones from Pradakshinapada to make it even, to make it easy for the devotees to circumambulate the shrines, and all of this. We can see how Appar Swami's devotion, especially in Tirupugalur, in his last few episodes of his life, how his service through Udavaru to clean the temple, to sweep it, to mop it, and remove all the unwanted vegetations and all that, was what he engaged himself with in the last few years of his life that he spent in Tirupugalur. So this can be understood at that level. So these are all physical work that you do at a primary level. It can be something as complicated as preparing a patch of land, seasoning it, making it worthy enough and fertile enough to set up a nice orchard or a flower garden, a Nandavanam. The flowers that can be planted there, the flowers that are to be used for Shiva Puja, how you can plant it, dig your tunnels, water them, maintain it, become a regular practiced gardener and a person who is trained in making flower garlands like Muruganayanar, to make flowers, garlands out of those permitted flowers in the required sizes for the regular service in the temples and offering it, or assisting to light lamps in temple, or preparing good aromatic dhupa. There are various materials in which dhupam can be offered to Shiva. So it has been a tradition in many, you can see in traditional Shiva temple processions, devotees carrying a long stick with a brass cup on top, which has glowing charcoal to which they add all these aromatic scents to offer dhupa to Shiva and his devotees, because it's a religious gathering, or fanning a Shiva devotee, supporting them, or painting the walls of a Shiva temple wherever it is required, safeguarding it, help to rebuild the temple physically. So all those services to begin with can be classified under the Shariyai school, and so all that is to be done associated with it. Basic knowledge about all of this is compiled in the Shariyai part of a Nagama. And so this is at a level understood better from all the services that Upper Brahman did popularly. Second compartment in any Agama is the Kriya part. Now thankfully, because this is associated with mostly with temple rituals, what the Shivacharyas do in the temples, and construction of temple, architecture that comes along with it, Murti Lakshana and Parivara Devatas, in which direction which Parivara Devata goes. If the Lingabhanam is this big, what should be the size of Umadevi or Ganapati or Subramanya, Surya and all these Parivara Devatas? Where do you install each of these Murtis? How is the temple to be envisioned? All of this, and installation process, rituals that goes into performing a proper installation in the temple, regular festivals that are to be, daily worship protocols, regular festivals that are to be conducted in the temple, and what happens when there is a requirement for purification, all these prayaschitta karmas, all of this is described. So because these are more manuals associated with architecture and ritual process in temples, majority of these have been well protected and handed over thanks to the Shivacharyas who worked for this. This compartment of the Agamas also speaks about the mantra prayoga. Each of the mantra, the syllables, what do you use where? The Mula Mantra for various different forms of Maheshwara, which describes, you know, the number of arms that he has, whether he is seated, standing or in his dancing position. Even if it is Nataraja for a dancing position, there are other Murtis also, like Bhujangatraja Murti or Bhujangalalita Murti, and which are all covered in the Ashtashta Murti, the 64 list of Shiva forms. So how each of it is different, the Mula Mantra for each of it, the Dhyana Sloka for each of it, all of this is compiled. And more importantly, because this is the Kriya part, the aspects like Sandhya Vandana and other Vedic rituals, as they are to be performed as ordained in the Shivagamas, that is also covered in this. Bhujas, different mantra jabas, when do you do it, sitting which direction do you face, the different asanas that you can sit on, the number of times you chant each of the mantra, and the siddhi that you achieve by chanting each of the mantra so many times, all of that is given. Then the process of getting yourself initiated into Shaiva, starting from the most basic Samaya Diksha, then Vishesha Diksha, finally the Nirvana Diksha. In fact, it used to be a tradition that the Jnana Bhagam of these Agamas were lectured only to people who have achieved the level of Nirvana Diksha. So that is how the progress has been maintained in a very, very fantastically structured fashion. And also about Acharya Abhisheka to be performed to a Shivacharya who has reached that level of practice and all that through his japam and his rituals and all that, to be permitted to perform the Parartha Bhuja. And now puja is of two types, you might all be knowing it. Atmartha Bhuja is what we all do as Shaivais with the Diksha to perform for our own good. The Murti is enshrined in our house and we worship it. That's for one's own good. Parartha is for the welfare of the complete settlement, the village or the country, the king, members, or the best way to understand it is Parartha Puja is for Loka Kshema. And because it is extremely complicated, trained people initiated into it with all the requirements are the ones who are permitted to do it. And in most cases here in Tamil Nadu and other places, it is the Shaivacharyas, the Shivacharyas or the Adi Shaivas as we call them, who are initiated to do the Parartha Puja. And so the Nirmanya Vidhi. So Shivalaya Nirmanam is a very complicated topic. How do you construct a Shiva temple? It does not start with just talking about architecture and other things. It starts from identifying a piece of land which is worthy enough to hold a Shiva temple on it. It starts from there. All the sagunas that you have to see when you go there to purchase a land or to see a land, and the role of the patron, the Shivacharya, the Shilpacharya, all three of them. Their job starts right from the time the search for a land to build a structure starts in. The Shivacharya is identified even before the temple is built. Because the Moolamurti to be enshrined depends on the Shivacharya also. So all of this is done. There are very few people who go on to collect the horoscopes. When they start patronizing a temple or to construct a temple, they in fact, it is prescribed that they collect the horoscope of the Shivacharya to be appointed, and the Shilpi or the Stapati, the Shilpacharya to be appointed to find the match. If everything goes on well, only then they venture into it. That's how detailed they have done these activities. It's not about just building a temple because there is space. So it starts from identifying a piece of land which is worthy enough to construct a temple, materials that can go into it, how do you fix a rock to make, to chisel out the Moolamurti if it is not a Swayambhu Murti, when you have to make a Murti yourself, how do you do it, select a rock, all of this is detailed out in it. So the Nagara Nirmanam comes in, and then in which part of the city you have which temple, and where are the houses given for people associated with the temple. So all of this is given in detail. After which it starts from Karshana, and the very popular saying, Karshanabdi Pradishtantam, Pradishtadi Utsavantam, Utsavati Prayachitartam, so Prayachitantam. So it speaks about starting from initiation or installation of the divinity of Shiva into the Murti there. The Murti might be made out of a piece of stone or a handful of soil or a log of wood, but the mantras and the rituals are powerful enough to invoke Parameshwara himself into it. It's a long process that they take through mantra, japa, yantra and tantra. Everything comes into it, and it is literally the essence of Parashiva is springed out, brought into the temple, into the Garbhagraha and installed into the Murti. That's how tedious, at the same time spiritually evoking the process of installation of Shiva Tattvam in a Lingabhanam is. So that's how it is done. And from there, how to go on to do your daily rituals, the monthly festivals, seasonal festivals, annual festivals and all that. And every time a festival gets over, the activity comes to a close by observing a few rituals as prayaschittam. Knowingly or unknowingly, there would have been some mistakes the people involved would have committed. Mistakes needn't always be physical. Mistakes can be mental. Mistakes can be out of, missing a certain count of mantra japa. It can all be much beyond our control and our senses. As human beings, we are meant to do it, but as the most merciful embodiment of mercy that Parameshwara is, he has also prescribed us these prayaschitta vidhis that helps us purify ourselves from the sins committed. So all of this is detailed out in the Kriya Bhaga. Then you have the Yoga Bhaga. That is like the next step. It is said that out of the Nalva, Sambandha Peruman observed mostly the Kriya Bhagam. He has sung in detail about festivals, about Abhishekams to be performed, about various Vedic chapters which were rendered in the temple, how Shiva himself is an embodiment of Veda, how the Shivagamas have been gifted through him, various Maheshwara Murtams, and all that has been detailed out by Sambandha more when compared to it. Now this is for an easy understanding. Our Acharyas have associated the Nalvar one each with the part of the Agamas. It does not mean that the others, they didn't probably touch or mention the others in their verses. Predominantly their verses and all the episodes in their Divya Charitram goes through these parts. So it's for an understanding at that level. This kind of a management has been done by our Acharyas. Third level is the Yoga Pada. Yoga Bhagam tells more about the internal worship. Now, starting from the first, one gets into the primary level, starts doing all the services in the temples, develop a sense of, interest to perform a Shiva Puja, approaches an Acharya, gets initiated, gets the Diksha, gets the Mantra and the Murti, installs it, does as an Atma Puja for himself. Regular Shiva Puja, maybe for several decades, depending upon the blessings of Parameshwara, one matures to a level that he or she ventures into the third nishya, which is the yoga level, wherein you don't need any of these physical objects to actually conduct a worship. Like what Pusalar did, you are seated in one corner in a quiet yogic position, you just keep concentrating on the Murti or his mantra, or it's just concentration on one particular object, and your heart just performs from inside. Your senses are all controlled to be focused only on that Murti from within, does all the Upacharas and the Japam, everything is done there. Till the Namaskaram and Prayashittam and all the prayers are done from within. You don't need any objects. This is the third level of maturity one achieves. So this particular Bhagam speaks about the 36 tattvas. Now the 36 tattvas will be, I'll throw some light on it when we speak about the Siddhanta, one of the next sessions. But as of now, understand like this, the 36 tattvas in Siddhanta speaks about all the elements at various levels that goes into making the universe, the process of coming from down, from going up again, all of this, the different blankets that covers the Atma and all of that. So each of it has got to be understood well, the roles played by each of the tattvas, because it is required to shed all these blankets to achieve, be a part of what is called as the Parashiva Vali, or you know, the cosmic world where Shiva Tattvam can be understood. So each of these blankets have to be shed. So in order to shed it, you will have to understand the qualities of each of it. So all these 36 tattvas, all that is discovered. Then there is also prescriptions about how do you achieve the Ashtama Siddhis. Anima, Mahima, Garima, Lagima, Prapti, Prakamya, Ishvita and Vasishta Siddhi. These are very tough and challenging Siddhis that are to be used only for the benefit of betterment of others. Now Anima makes oneself just small. Shrink your physical size to an atom's level. Mahima is to blow up yourself in an unimaginable size. So all of this is achieved through Siddhis. This can go up to the last one. Vasishta Siddhi speaks about making yourself to control birth and death and more. These Siddhis are extremely challenging and requires several eons to achieve and apply it. There have been very few Mahajnanis like Tirumular probably who have achieved these kind of Siddhis, but they are the kind of people who never use this for their own betterment or their own profit. Then you have chapters which speaks about the Kundalini Yoga school also, about the seven chakras, the Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, Manipuraka, Anahada, Vishuddhi, Ajna and the Sahasrara chakra. How do you invoke your Kundalini from your Mooladhara, take it all the way up and take it to the level of the Sahasrara, envision Nataraja performing his Ananda Tandava right there. That's why the Sahasrara is considered as a lotus made out of 1,000 petals. And the two very special days for every Shaivite in his calendar, the Ani Tirumanjanam day and the Margadi Arudra day, that very rare occasion, only twice a year, when Sri Nataraja Murthy at Chidambaram gives his darshan from the 1,000 pillared hall, that is to be understood as the Sahasrara Chakram, which when blossomed, you get to experience the Ananda Thandava of Nataraja. That's how Patanjali Yoga in fact goes. So this seven chakras and the Kundalini Yoga school. And then about the Ashtanga Yogas. Now that is the most important school of yoga here. And each of it helps you achieve a level of, end it with the Samadhi level. It starts with Yama. Yama is about the ethics one should have. That starts from observing vegetarianism and being truthful. All of these five basic ethics that is required. And then you have Niyama, which is the habits. Being clean yourself, speaking only the right way, not offending anybody by your actions, words or your thoughts. So all of these are habits that one should inculcate at the second level. Then you get into the asana, which is like the different postures that you do. Once you get into your asana, you will have to regulate your breathing, which is the pranayama, your inhalation and exhalation cycle, the number of counts, how many seconds you hold it. All of that is detailed at the fourth level of maturity. Then you go into pratyahara. That's when your inhalation exhalation has achieved a rhythm, a basic rhythm, and all your sensory distractions kind of die after a level. You just close your eyes and sit in meditation. You can see, you can visualize from within all the different directions in which our senses goes around, gets distracted, but it has only a limit. After a point of time, the active nature of our senses kind of freezes and it all kind of succumbs, wherein concentration starts, or the sixth level called as dharana. Dharana. So that is where the concentration starts. You start concentrating either on the mantra or your Mooladhara or a murti of Shiva or the pranava mantra or whatever it is, you just start concentrating on that one particular object or a syllable. Finally, that is where then you enter into dhyana. Continued concentration of this one particular thing without a sense of distraction is what is dhyana or meditation, which is the seventh level of the Ashtanga Yoga, seventh anga. Finally, the eighth anga is to freeze in this meditation that just goes on and on and on and achieving samadhi. Once that is achieved, you don't move from there physically. There is no thought about your own physical self. It is only the antaratma that does everything, and you start realizing that it is Parameshwara who is there as the antaratma who has been doing all of this, and this by itself will take you to liberation. This is like the third level, the yoga component, and it is believed that it was Sundaramurti Nayana who established his relationship to Shiva through the yoga pada. Then finally you have the Jnana Marga, the Jnana Pagam of the Agamas, which speaks about the philosophy of Shaiva Siddhanta. The Pasu, Pati, Pasa, Tattvam, the three most important topics to be understood in Shaiva Siddhanta. And like how the Upanishads are celebrated as the Vedanta, this compartment of Jnana Bhagam is celebrated as the Agamantam, and this is the most venerated, revered component in any Agama. Purely it speaks about philosophy, the obstacles that you face when you take your spiritual journey towards understanding Parameshwara and his roles as the Pati, and how he has been there always, we as Pasus, and you know the Atma, how it has been brought into this this birth, and how it has been given this body, the senses, your sensory perceptions, how they create a kind of chaotic nature, how to control them, the three important obstacles that you face, and anava, kanma and maya, how to fight against it, the role of each of it, and all of this, most importantly the role of a guru, the Diksha Guru, and the relationship that you share between you and your guru, and Parameshwara, the triangle, and at a level putting guru at par with Parameshwara with no difference at all, and all services that you do to your guru is as much as that of serving Parameshwara. All of this is discussed in the fourth part, or the Jnana Bhagam, and so the nature of Atma, Shiva, all that is discussed, and the power of the Pashas here, all of that. And this also speaks about how Parameshwara takes up the duty of destruction at the end of every kalpa, and the new creations, how does it start, and how the creation cycle starts, who is created first, followed by who, the different layers, and the blankets that covers the bhuvana, as I told you, the bhuvanam being created, and the dhanu, karana, and the bhogam that you enjoy, all of that is detailed out in the Jnana Bhaga. This is like the most important part, because it speaks about the philosophy in its purest form. And daily rituals to be performed, that is covered in the Kriya Bhaga, and the importance of Shiva Puja. Shiva Puja as a means to liberation is time and again stressed out. And how you can burn down the three different forms of impurity, Anava, Kanma and Maya, through Shiva Puja. The difference between Atmartha and Pararta Puja. Purification rituals, flowers that can be used. How do you collect water for Shiva Puja? How you purify the collected water? How you keep it on the ground? What is the asana that you use? All of this has been spoken about. And for people who are into Pararta Puja, again, Atmartha Puja is a mandate. However an age-old temple or the ones visited by Acharyas, and all that is there, the Pararta Puja is performed. The person who is performing it, the Shaivacharya, it's a mandate for him to perform his Atmartha Puja also. And daily rituals in each kala, how do you perform it? And how do you invoke the murti in the, how do you invoke the essence of Shiva in the murti? The upacharas that you perform during the different parts of a day, starting from the Ushat Kalam all the way up to the Ardhajamam, and then monthly pujas, fortnightly pujas, and seasonal ones, special occasions, the annual utsavams, how do you, you know, the annual utsavams are very elaborately detailed about, you know, creating a circle of protection around the whole village or the settlement, and, initiating different bhutaganas and different devas in different directions, asking them to stand there till the festival gets over to safeguard the village and its residents without any obstacles. All of this, hoisting a flag, the vajra rohanam, all of this. If you think it is only about doing all of this, the Agamas also speaks about what happens if you miss any of it, or if there is a sudden calamity that has come, like whatever we are encountering now, that people cannot go in and major festivals cannot be done in temples. What happens? What is the plan B that is suggested? How can you not skip it, but how can you perform it in a more not so elaborate fashion? What are the options available? So that is how forward looking and future thinking the Agamas have been. So it's that way. At this point, I would just like to make a mention about another very classic 14th century work, which is very popularly taught in Agama schools, called as the Jirnodharana Dashaka, authored by a Shaivacharya named Nigamajnana. He himself was a witness of the invasions and the wars that happened in the 14th century. Several shrines across India were demolished, looted, plundered, murtis were chiseled out, broken and all that. So this gentleman, who has witnessed all of these gory events, says that he has found shelter in the Gopura built by Sambhuvaraya kings in the shrine of Arunachaleshwara in Trivannamalai, finds shelter there in a niche inside the Gopura, and he has authored this wonderful manual on how to rehabilitate, rebuild these temples when a calamity like this strikes. There are notes which speaks about what happens to a temple if it is forested suddenly, if an approach is not there. So there can be cases where even the Shivacharya is powerful enough to initiate and invoke the presence of Shiva from the Murti, from within himself, carry it to his house, sit there. It is as much as he carrying the Moolamurti within himself, performs all the rituals there. What happens if you cannot enter a shrine because it is just filled up with reptiles? If there are poisonous snakes, we see a lot of temples that are semi-demolished, fallen down and all that. So the acharyas can perform their pujas from standing from outside. Bhavanabhishekams can be done when you cannot actually do an ablutions for whatever reasons. In case of wars, how the Utsavamurtis can be buried and safeguarded, and the particular directions, the prayaschittas that you do to a murti which is excavated and brought out after several years, all of this has been spoken about. But a war and mutilation of temples and sculptures and the murtis isn't something that they would have probably ventured initially, but Nigamajnana stood witness to it and authored a book about what to do even when a Moolamurti is broken because of these kind of calamities. Those are untoward events which we cannot even think about, but there are cases that they have happened, and these Mahacharyas have given us the way to come out of it. The 25 Maheshwara Murtis have been detailed out, starting from Bhikshatana, Kamasamhari, Kalasamhara, Kalyanasundara, Vrishabharuta, Chandrashekara, Umamaheshwara, Tripurari, Jalandrari, Nataraja, Gajasamhara, Veerabhadra, Hariardha, Ardhanarishwara, Kiratamurti, Kankala, Chandeshanugrahamurti, Chakrapradhanamurti, Ekapadamurti, Somaskanda, Vigneshwara Anugrahamurti, Dakshinamurti, Vishapaharana, Lingodbhava, Sukhasanamurti. These are the 25 Maheshwara Murtas. Again, 5 of them in groups are believed to have emanated from the 5 faces of Sadashiva. So each of them have a connection with Sadashiva. That is how the Moola Mantrams, the grammar for each of them, the complexion, number of arms, weapons they carry, the role of Parvati in a few, Parvati not being in a few, all of that is described again in the Agamas. I conclude this session by speaking about this beautiful 4x4 matrix, as I would like to call it, wherein the 4 compartments, Chariyai, Kriyai, Yogam and Jnanam, are attempted as 4 in each of it. Now there is a Chariyai in Chariya Bhagam, Chariyai in your Kriya, Chariyai in Yogam, Chariyai in Jnanam. Similarly, you have 16 steps, so 4 for each of the 4 available compartments. Now Chariya stage in Chariya is basic temple services like lighting lamps and other things. Kriya component in Chariya is to start worshipping a particular murti, develop an interest in a particular murti and start worshipping it. And the yoga part in Chariya is to get yourself initiated into a simple mantram and start doing your dhyanam for that murti. Finally, getting a divine experience in your Chariya margam itself or dasa margam itself is by itself the jnanam achieved there. Then in Kriya, there is a Chariya part, which is Kriya is basically doing all your rituals and other things. So the primary activity is to collect materials that are required for the rituals. So that is the Chariya part in Kriya. Kriya in Kriya is to learn elaborate procedures to do a proper Shiva Puja. Yogam part is stopping this and start doing your rituals from within. Slowly you start doing it. Finally, attaining a divine experience by following achieving the Jnana part in Kriya. In yoga, I was telling you about the Ashtanga Yoga, the 8 different steps that you take. The first 4 steps of Yama, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, the first 4 parts becomes your Chariya, the basic level. The Pratyagara, or closing your senses and start concentration, or Pratyagara or Dharana, comes into the Kriya part of Yoga. The yoga part of yogam is when you enter the state of dhyana, and the moksha or jnana part of yogam is when you attain the level of samadhi. Similarly, in yoga, when you start getting into philosophy and entering to the next level, listening to lectures on the jnana texts or philosophical works is like the charya part for jnanam, and meditating, recalling and munching upon your learnings from those books, the religious books, is about the kriya part. Finally, getting a very thorough clarification of these works is the yogam part. Finally, to achieve a level of jnana nishtai is the jnanam in jnana. So the 4x4 matrix with all these activities, different activities that takes you in a progressive level to attain liberation, is also beautifully detailed out with. So we have, in today's session, we have seen about the importance of Shiva Puja, the clear guideline manual that the agamas are, their roles, how they have evolved, the types of agamas, the number of agamas, their upagamas, the other books that have come based on the agamas, the four important compartments in each agama, what each of it speaks in detail, how and how the Nalvar tradition, of course, Manikavachagar is associated with the Jnana Marga. So you have the Dhasa Marga, Saputra Marga, the Sundarar's relationship as a friend, and finally San Marga, which is the route that Manikavachagar took. They are all to be treated equal. There is absolutely no difference in the level of achievement or anything. It is only the four different routes that these Jnanacharya Purushas took to attain Shiva. So this is for us to understand at that level. Now, most of these devotees have chosen one of these four paths. And the most venerated of them, the Nayanmars, have chosen one of these four paths to attain Shiva Jnana. And this is why the routes that they have chosen and the way Shiva walked them through that path is to be understood. And that's why we give a lot of importance to the Puranas, which detail out the greatness of our saints and our acharyas as much as that of Shiva. So the fourth lecture of this series, that is to happen tomorrow, is dedicated to these great devotees to understand and how they have taken the path. Out of these 63, of course, the Nayanmars, the Nalvar saints alone, Upper Sambandhar, Sundarar and Manikavachagar, because of, to understand their works also along with them, those four Mahajnanis, Divya Charitram is reserved for the fifth day, but for that all the other Nayanmars, and it is impossible to cover all the 63 Nayanmars in 1 hour's time. So I'll just pick a few classic examples to understand how one of the chosen Margam had led them to Shiva Mukti and how Shiva has taken them, and few very interesting episodes which gives us a very different view and how different forms of bhakti has all reached them to the same level. That is for tomorrow. So at 6 p.m. in the same website. Ponnum meipurulum taruvane, bogamum thiruvum punarpane, pinnai enpilagai poruppane, pilagalam thavira panippane, inna tanmayan endru ariyavunna emmane, elivanda pirane, annam vaihum vayal padanathu ani aaruurane marakkalumame, vaazha andanar vaanavar aaninam, veezha tanpunal veendanum moonguha, aalga thiyadellam arannamame soolga vayahamum thiyardhirave. வான்முகில் வழாது பெய்க மலிவளம் சுரக்க மன்னன் கோன்முறை அரசு செய்க குறைவிலாது உயிர்கள் வாழ நான்மறை அறங்கள் ஓங்க நத்தவம் வேள்வி மல்க மேன்மைகோள் சைவ நீதி விளங்குக உலகமெல்லாம் மூர்த்தியெல்லாம் வாழி எங்கள் மோன குருவாழி அருள் வார்த்தை என்றும் வாழி அன்பர் வாழி பராபரமே எல்லாம் ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ கிருபை ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ மகாராஜோ விஜயதே ஆரூரா தியாகேசா.